From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up,
the past does not have to define the future. Yesterday's conflict does not have to be tomorrow's war.
That's President Donald Trump after his meeting in Singapore with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un that went into the early morning hours U.S. time. Retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin will be here with analysis of yesterday's historic summit. And the Southern Poverty Law Center is at it again, launching yet another attack against PragerU, a conservative nonprofit that has produced hundreds of popular short videos explaining conservative ideas. Talk radio host, writer, and speaker Dennis Prager will be here with the latest. Also talking about ruffling feathers, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey is apologizing for eating a Chick-fil-A sandwich after he left. The left became unhinged because he supported the Christian-owned and operated fast food chain with a purchase. Dan Gaynor with the Media Research Center will be here with his analysis of that story. And will President Trump's meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un ignite religious freedom within that country and possibly bring more historic meetings with other rogue nations? We'll talk about it with FRC's Travis Weber later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you miss anything on your way home, you can check it out later. It's all archived right there, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, yesterday's historic meeting between President Donald Trump and Chairman Kim Jong-un could lead to many significant developments, but it's a historic meeting because it's the first meeting between the president, a president of the United States, and North Korean leader. Joining us now with analysis of the outcome of this meeting initially and what may yet to develop is our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, retired from the United States Army and the Executive Vice President here at the Family Research Council. He's in big demand as folks are looking for kind of an analysis of this situation. So, General, glad to have you joining us here on Washington Watch.
Well, I'm glad to be with you, Tony.
All right. Of course, the details, you know, still coming out about this, a letter, an agreement signed leading to supposed to lead to the denuclearization of North Korea. Your thoughts in the initial information coming out of the meeting?
Yeah, not only is this historic, the meeting itself is historic, but I think it has the potential and probably will change the course of history. I mean, we're on a new path now. I think the idea of going into this thing was that we had to get one thing resolved, and that was that Kim was willing to denuclearize to get rid of his nuclear program, and he has agreed to that. So if for no other reason, this has been a very, very important meeting.
Well, this is what the president had to say following the meeting regarding that aspect of the meeting.
Chairman Kim and I just signed a joint statement in which he reaffirmed his unwavering commitment to complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. We also agreed to vigorous negotiations to implement the agreement as soon as possible. And he wants to do that. This isn't the past. This isn't another administration that never got it started and therefore never got it done. Chairman Kim has told me that North Korea is already destroying a major missile engine testing site. That's not in your signed document. We agreed to that after the agreement was signed. That's a big thing. For the missiles that they were testing, the site is going to be destroyed very soon.
A reference there to another administration. Is that a veiled reference to the Iran nuclear agreement between the Obama administration?
Well, I think it is, but I also think it's a veiled reference to his three previous, his predecessors, all of which, starting back with Bill Clinton, all of which failed to do what he has just done.
This, obviously, top of the list is removing the nuclear capabilities of North Korea there on the peninsula. Do you, given the 18 months experience we have of this administration in their foreign policy, do you think this administration will follow through and get that done?
I do. I really do. To begin with, I think we've got to go back and realize that there's been a lot of backdoor diplomacy that's gone into this whole thing. Negotiations with the Chinese as well as the North Koreans and the South Koreans and Japan. So I think there's a lot that we haven't seen. But I don't think that they would have had this meeting had Kim not come in with a clear intent of denuclearizing. And I don't think that he's playing any games when he says, I will denuclearize. That said, I think there's a lot that lies ahead in terms of the specifics of how that's going to be done, what period of time it's going to be done, and then what the United States and its allies are going to do in return. It has to include incredible trade incentives and economic incentives to help to rebuild a starving North Korea. And I think that's probably his first and foremost demand. Secondly, he'll want to go immediately to discussions on the U.S. presence there. That is going to be more difficult probably than the economic program.
The issue of economic activity, trade, the sanctions clearly have worked here in bringing Kim Jong-un to a point of negotiations.
Yes, that's true. And what else is interesting about this is that it was only maybe a month ago that the Chinese finally started refusing to import his coal. That means the Chinese actually crossed the Rubicon and decided that they were going to participate in a more serious way with the sanctions on North Korea.
And that goes back to Donald Trump's negotiations with them.
That's right. And that's the backdoor portion that I'm talking about.
Right. But clearly this president has put into play his quote-unquote negotiation skills. I mean, he thrives on that from the folks I've spoken to in the White House. I think also you made reference to Kim Jong-un, the military presence. Actually, one of the things he wants is, and it was in this agreement, for the United States to protect North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
A part of that, I think, right. is protecting his regime from, you know, what we saw in Libya and, mm-hmm. and elsewhere. He wants to make mm-hmm. sure the United States, if he lays down his weapons, his regime will not become a casualty.
Yeah, no question about that. But remember also that the U.S. presence there is important to the Japanese as well as the South Koreans and the rest of Asia. And there are lots of South Koreans that do not want to see the U.S. leave there. But here's let me make another point here, Tony. What Donald Trump has done over the months preceding these negotiations was he has established, I think, not only with North Korea but with China, that we consider the North Korean nuclear program to be an existential threat, mm-hmm. which means left with no options, we'll use the final option, and that's the military option. They have to believe that. And I think that he went in with that credibility that, look, if you leave us no choice, we'll use the military option. That gives the incentive to China as well as North Korea to get serious about this and to work with us on this.
General Boykin, let's talk a moment about this obviously top priority, removing the nuclear capabilities of North Korea, as you said, a threat to that region. Human rights is a very significant issue. One of the most repressive regimes, the most repressive regime when it comes to Christians in the world. They have the prison camps. I am told that this was a part of the discussion. Media not reporting that, saying it was not. I am certain, and I want to get your thoughts on this, that in the follow-up meetings that will take place with the Secretary of State and with others, that clearly is going to be an issue that the United States brings to the table of discussions with the North Koreans.
I don't think there's any question about that. Look, he talked openly about Otto Warmbier. That in itself is a discussion about human rights. I mean, I think he made very clear that he's focused on human rights when he brought that up and in such a passionate way talked about the sacrifice that Otto Warmbier made that we might get to this point with these negotiations. So there's no question in my mind. He's been talked to by the Japanese about the abduction of Japanese people. He's been talked to by you and others like you with his Faith Council about the persecution of Christians. And he's been talked to by a number of groups about just the overall human rights climate in that part of the world. And I don't think there's any question. We don't know what was said behind closed doors,
right.
But there's no question that human rights is an issue that's going to be pursued.
Well, given this president's track record on this, the Nigerian president last month, he brought that issue up. The Secretary of State is committed to this issue, especially to the protection of religious minorities. I mean, he's holding his own summit next month to discuss this issue. So I am, despite what the media might say, I am confident that human rights is going to be, unlike it was in the previous administration, is going to be a priority. And I think we're going to see significant change, not only in that North Korea, but I think the effect of that is going to be felt literally around the world.
Well, I think it is. I mean, it probably North Korea is the darkest place in the world today.
Literally. If you look at a satellite image, you can see that. But spiritually and politically is dark as well.
That's right. And there are literally Soviet-style gulags there where people are born and die inside a gulag and never see the outside of that fence. Read the book Escape from Camp 13, and it's very vivid in its description of these gulags there. And that, I promise you, that is going to be addressed with Kim Jong-un and his people. It may not be a president to the Kim, but it is going to be discussed by Mike Pompeo and other diplomats within the State Department, because this is a serious issue, and we don't want to walk away not having addressed that.
Well, I can tell you this. I'm going to be pushing as a commissioner on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom to visit North Korea and to look at it ourselves and report to the president and the Secretary of State and the Congress, as we are tasked with the responsibility of doing, given that the president has opened this door. It's been a place that's pretty much been off limits, but I think this is a new day.
Well, make sure you take some Pop-Tarts, because food is scarce over there.
Well, you know, my diet's limited anyway, so I'll do just fine. I'll grab a few MREs, and I think I'll be in good shape.
Yeah.
A jar of peanut butter, a loaf of bread, and I'm set.
You're good.
General, I think, in all seriousness, I think this is a huge, huge development that I think the reverberations will literally be felt around the world, as every rogue dictator will realize that America is serious about using negotiations, if possible, to bring about peace and protection for people around the world.
Yeah, and think about this. You know, all the news focus was on the G7, because what Trump was doing was actually very positive. But now, if this comes through and to fruition, it preserves peace in the whole world.
Yeah. He clearly marches to the beat of a different drum.
He does.
And does not fit the political stereotypes.
There are global reverberations to what he did last night.
Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks so much.
Good to be with you.
All right, folks, don't go away. When we come back, SPLC's at it again, and Dennis Prager is here to talk about it. Don't go away. We're back with more right after this.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, civil liberties attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, senior research fellow in the technology policy program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
You have probably heard a lot about the LGBT movement on television and social media, in the news, and from celebrities. But do you know what is true and what is false? FRC has created a new resource that gives you the facts on LGBT issues to help you navigate the challenging topics surrounding human sexuality. We are all created in the image and likeness of God, and all people are equal in dignity and value and must be treated with respect. LGBT activists operate on a weak understanding of sexuality and ignore how scientific and empirical evidence refutes their claims. To get factual, practical answers on how to respond to the LGBT movement, go to frc.org/LGBT, where you can download this important resource free of charge. Again, go to frc.org/LGBT to learn more.
Every day, Christian values are increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. What can ordinary Christians do to make their voices heard in their day-to-day lives and in Washington, D.C.? Family Research Council is here to help with answers and insight from our experts. Our work in Washington, D.C. is to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture. We want to hear from you. Send us your questions about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church, or about any issue that FRC stands for, issues like life, marriage and family, or religious liberty. Go to frc.org/askfrc and enter Ask FRC in the subject line. We'll consider your question, and you may also have a chance to be published on our blog. Again, that address is frc.org/askfrc. Thank you for standing with us.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is @TPerkins. All right, last Thursday, while I was out vacationing with my family, we were up in actually, we had just left the Ark and making our way back to Louisiana. But the leftist group, Southern Poverty Law Center, last Thursday, launched its first direct assault against PragerU, a conservative nonprofit behind hundreds of short, engaging videos that explain conservative thought and conservative worldview. Now, joining us now is conservative talk radio host, writer, speaker, Dennis Prager. Dennis, welcome to Washington Watch.
It's always great to be with you, Tony. Thank you.
Well, it's good to have you on. We haven't, I think we haven't spoken since NRB, so it's good to reconnect with you. The SPLC attacked PragerU on its Hate Watch blog last Thursday. Now, it didn't go so far as to designate you as a hate group. I guess it's hard for one person to be a group. But it did report on your organization's influence as if it were a threat to American society. What do you have to say about that?
We are a threat to the left, a very big one. We will have 1 billion views this year. We had 650 million last year. The majority are under 35 years of age. So it's interesting. Even Mother Jones and BuzzFeed, two major sources of the left, they did big pieces on PragerU last year, or earlier this year, and actually. They actually, the pieces were pretty fair, interestingly, because there's really nothing that even in a fevered mind could be depicted as hateful on our website. I mean, you know, when you have George Will and Brett Stephens and Charles Krauthammer and Steve Forbes, you're not exactly talking, you know, a hateful bunch of people, just to give a few examples. So what they did was particularly loathsome, which is par for the course for the Southern Poverty Libel Center. And what they did was they – and this is – you have to hear that, Tony, it's so convoluted, it's hard for me to have memorized. We had Dave Rubin do one of our videos. Dave Rubin's very popular video cast guy, and he – is a liberal, lifelong liberal. He's gay, he's a Jew, he's a liberal. I mean, he's got great credentials for the left. But he gave his, and I could say that because I'm Jewish, so your listeners shouldn't panic. But the video's subject was why I left the left. And its thesis is they're meaner, they're less tolerant, they're less open, they're less kind, they're less compassionate than the right. This is from a lifelong liberal with all the other credentials that I mentioned. So that drove them absolutely crazy because there's nothing more obnoxious to the left than a defector. And he appears to be a defector. So now listen to this. So we had him do that video. Now, he, to his credit, interviews people from all over the spectrum. So one of the people he interviewed, whom I'm not particularly familiar with, was a guy named I gotta find this guy's name. 1 minute. Stephen Molyneux. Are you familiar with him?
I am not.
Okay, exactly. So he's not exactly a household name, which is not hardly a knock, just a fact. And he even interviewed Milo Yiannopoulos. And so here's the story. So he has interviewed people he doesn't agree with. These people are unacceptable to the left, rightly or wrongly. And because I had Rubin, who had them, that's the connection between PragerU and the alt-right. Get it?
I think I'm following. But it's hard to follow SPLC's logic. Other than this, I think it boils down to this, is that they can't tolerate opposing ideas. That's what it's ultimately about, is it not?
Entirely right, and it's more than that. As it happens, by wonderfully good luck, my field of study was communist affairs at Columbia at the Russian Institute. My whole life I've been studying the left. And since Stalin called Trotsky a fascist, I mean, which is a joke because, of course, Trotsky was the father of the Russian Revolution along with Lenin and the father of the Russian, the Red Army.
But that's how he got him out of the way.
Yes, by calling him a fascist. So ever since then, that is what the left does. The left throws the worst names at those they don't agree with. That's all they know how to do. They don't build. They know how to destroy. They are nihilists. And there is nothing in the country more loathsome, maybe Antifa, but they don't have they don't have any intellectual influence. But in terms of intellectual influence, the SPLC is as low life as it gets.
Is there going to be a turning point in this? Because they seem to be the go-to source for many in the media as an authoritative figure.
Yes, that's the problem. Not only that, but when the New York Times or others, including, unfortunately, now Google and YouTube, when they use them, the New York Times writes about the Southern Poverty Law Center, it never notes left-wing. There has never been a time I have been mentioned in the mainstream media that conservative talk show host has not been added, the word conservative. They label our politics, but they never label the left's politics. So people think that there's something honorable and neutral, but there's nothing honorable and nothing neutral about the SPLC.
Well, Dennis, I know you know what music means. It means we're out of time.
That's why I shut up.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us, and thank you for fighting the fight
for
free speech. And always great to have you on the program. Dennis Prager, look, these videos are outstanding. They really, really are. They set the standard. So check them out. Go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over, and keep up with Dennis. All right, when we come back, continuing our look at the left and really social media, the CEO of Twitter ruffled some feathers at Chick-fil-A. We'll talk about it next. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come.
Hello, can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice.
You have probably heard a lot about the LGBT movement on television and social media, in the news, and from celebrities. But do you know what is true and what is not true? FRC has created a new resource that gives you the facts on LGBT issues to help you navigate challenging topics in human sexuality. To get factual, practical answers on how to respond to the LGBT movement, go to frc.org/LGBT.
Every day, Christian values are increasingly being pushed out of public policy. What can ordinary Christians do to make their voices heard in their day-to-day lives and in Washington, D.C.? We want to hear from you. Send us a question you may have about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church. Go to frc.org/askfrc and enter Ask FRC in the subject line for a chance to be published on our blog. Thank you for standing with us.
If you think anti-Semitism is a thing of the past, think again. In the last 3 years, over 1,700 anti-Semitic incidents have occurred on college campuses across the country. This new anti-Semitism is disguised simply as opposition to the State of Israel's policies toward Palestinians. But a closer look at these incidents reveal how Jewish college students are being attacked merely for believing that Israel should exist. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/antisemitism.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey tweeted about his visit to the chicken chain, which those of you in the South are very familiar with, Chick-fil-A. He went there this past weekend. He was pleased with the 10% discount that he got from using a mobile app. And so he tweeted about it. I mean, he's the CEO of Twitter. Well, the online backlash was immediate and intense from followers who sought to remind Dorsey that the chain CEO, Dan Cathy, is a supporter of natural marriage. Therefore, it was inappropriate for him during the month of June, Gay Pride Month, to tweet about his chicken sandwich, even though he got it at a discount. With us now is Dan Gaynor. He is the Media Research Center's Vice President for Business and Culture. Dan, critics took to social media claiming it was in extremely poor taste, especially during Pride Month, for Dorsey to make such a hateful statement on Twitter. And of course, he immediately began to crawfish and apologize.
Yeah, a good friend of mine refers to Chick-fil-A humorously as the way the left does, as hate chicken. I mean, that's how extreme they are. You're not allowed to eat what you want. You're not allowed to wear you want. And if you do, and you're Jack Dorsey, somebody as prominent as Soledad O'Brien, who used to be a CNN host, comes at you. I mean, you know, and yes, it's Pride Month. But if it weren't Pride Month, they would use some other excuse. If it were another month, they'd say, oh, it's insensitive. The left is working very aggressively to do what they refer to in college and online as deplatforming, which means there's no place for conservatives, there's no place for Christians, and I mean no place online or offline. You're not allowed to have a restaurant. You're not allowed to have a website. You're not allowed to tweet or whatever. And that's a very extreme position that, frankly, ends badly for our nation.
Yeah, in responding to some of the criticism, you know, Dorsey replied, quote, completely forgot about their background. Well, their background is that they are a Christian-owned business, and their background also means that they also includes the fact that they employ 41,000 people This is one of the largest fast food chains in America. In fact, soon to be probably the largest if they continue their growth pattern. So this level of political correctness where you can't even have a differing viewpoint. And what is troubling to me, Dan, is that not that the left demands this, but someone who is in charge of one of the nation's largest social media platforms immediately apologizes and tries to do penance before the left.
Well, we did this big report, Censored, talking about censorship of online platforms. We focused on Twitter, Facebook, Google, and Google's video site, YouTube. And we considered Twitter to be far worse and of all those, and probably of many others that you could analyze. The Twitter has a trust and safety council that has 25 U.S. members. 12 of them are liberal. Only one is conservative. This is the world that they operate in. These are the groups that listen to the Southern Poverty Law Center. These are the groups that, listen to hate speech on the left and consider it to be normal, and hate speech that they can somehow tie to the right, anecdotally, and they say, oh, you must be destroyed for it. I mean, they went after, as I'm sure you know, after Dennis Prager on SPLC the other day.
Yeah, we just had him on the program earlier today talking about that very thing.
That's the kind of attitude they have. Jack Dorsey, I guess probably a couple months ago now, tweeted out a story that someone had written about how California had turned into a one-party state and how gradually conservatives have been pushed out. And basically, the article made the case that this is the place where we are in America, too, that there is no way forward for a united America, that basically only one side can win and it wants the left to win. And he tweeted that out and said, good reason. So, I mean, yes, conservatives are very concerned about how they're treated, particularly on Twitter. And, yes, the occasional thing happens to somebody who's really nutty on the left. Louis Farrakhan just had his blue check, his verification removed, because he's a bigoted anti-Semite and said really bigoted anti-Semitic things. But still, by and large, they're far more tolerant of statements on the left than they ever are on the right.
Yeah, I just think it's very revealing to see how the CEO, the head of Twitter, responds to criticism from the left because he happened to eat in a restaurant that serves chicken sandwiches from a family that happens to be Christian and believes in natural marriage. I mean, I hope people are waking up, Dan. Dan, thanks so much for joining us. It's always great to talk with you.
Thank you very much. You have a great day. All
right. You do. Dan Gaynor, Media Research Center, they track all this stuff. You can find out more by going to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. And you can follow the links over. Media Research Center, great, great organization that we work very closely with. All right. When we come back, I'm going to be joined by Travis Weber, the director of our Center for Religious Liberty here at the Family Research Council. I want to go back to our top story. The ramifications of the president's meeting with Kim Jong-un. What might this mean to the persecuted around the globe? That's next. Don't go away.
Are you interested in making a real impact in public policy and culture? Are you looking for more internship experience at a Christian organization in the heart of our nation's capital? If you answered yes, spend a semester in Washington, D.C. with Family Research Council through our internship program. You will get a chance to experience our country's rich history and culture and be immersed in the most important political debates of our day. Further, you will develop the skills required to advance faith, family, and freedom in our nation. Family Research Council's internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. As an intern, you will gain invaluable public policy experience in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. Learn more about the FRC internship program at frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. If you think anti-Semitism is a thing of the past, think again. In the last 3 years, over 1,700 anti-Semitic incidents have occurred on college campuses across the country. Supposed anti-hate watchdog groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center have curiously turned a blind eye to this emerging campus threat, and this new anti-Semitism has flown under the radar. The perpetrators of the new anti-Semitism are primarily the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, or BDS, movement and the Students for Justice in Palestine. These two groups disguise their bigotry simply as opposition to the State of Israel's policies toward Palestinians. But a closer look at the language and tactics used by these groups reveals how Jewish college students are being attacked for believing that Israel should exist, or merely because they are Jews. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/antisemitism.
Hello, can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice.
Every day, Christian values are increasingly being pushed out of public policy. What can ordinary Christians do to make their voices heard in their day-to-day lives and in Washington, D.C.? We want to hear from you. Send us a question you may have about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church. Go to frc.org/askfrc and enter Ask FRC in the subject line for a chance to be published on our blog. Thank you for standing with us.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. The website, tonyperkins.com. Lots of resources, links to many things here at the Family Research Council. Our policy experts put papers up there, talking points. There's links to a call to fall coming up, an opportunity for churches to actually do what God said. 2 Chronicles 7:14, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven, forgive their sin, and heal their land. Well, let's take it upon ourselves. And so for the last 10 years, the first Sunday or the Sunday closest to the 4th of July, when people are celebrating their freedom, we say, before we celebrate our independence, let's declare our dependence upon God. And let's take the initiative as believers in this country to get on our faces before God, fall down before him, thanking him, number one, for, I think, the reprieve that we've been given in this nation. I mean, if you think about the path that we were on and the change that's taken place in the last 18 months, let's just take religious freedom, throw in the sanctity of human life. And look at the policy changes that have taken place. We have a reason to be thankful, but we really need a transformation of the heart. And this is where the church comes in. The government can't change people's minds. They can't change people's hearts. They can change the laws. They can guide behavior, but they can't transform people. They can't change their hearts. That's what the gospel does. And this is the opportunity for the church, number one, to allow that transformational truth of God's word to invade our lives, yielding ourselves completely and totally to him. And then, as our lives are transformed by that truth, we go out and we transform others by sharing that truth. We don't actually do the transformation. We just share the truth that transforms. So, if you're not participating in that yet or you don't know, take it to your church pastor. You can participate in it. Call to fall.org.com or just go to tonyperkins.com. Follow the links over. All right. Earlier we were talking with General Jerry Boykin, kind of dissecting, doing analysis of the president's historic meeting yesterday. Went into the wee hours of the morning here in the United States. It actually began. Singapore is 12 hours ahead of us, but went into late into the night here in the States. And so we looked at that. But what might be the implications of this beyond the Korean Peninsula. We as you know, more and more focusing on this issue of religious freedom globally because it has implications here domestically for us and vice versa. So will there be a domino effect of these North Korean discussions for not just North Koreans, but for other persecuted peoples elsewhere? Because we feel pretty confident that these discussions of human rights were intertwined with the discussion of the denuclearization of North Korea. Joining us now is Travis Webb, director of the Center for Religious Liberty here at the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Now, beyond the big issue, major focus here, the national security threat, the threat to many countries, Japan, others, South Korea, obviously, the denuclearization of North Korea. But human rights, one of the greatest abusers of human rights, North Korea, Christians persecuted at an unprecedented level in North Korea, not the only place, but they're at the top of the list, have been for a number of years. How might a changed North Korea, in terms of if the president is successful in starting this conversation, which develops into a relationship where North Korea wants to join the rest of the world as being acting as humans and civil, how might this affect other persecuted peoples in different parts of the world?
Yeah, I think it can only have a positive effect because to see change on this issue in North Korea, we have to know that President Trump raised this issue and world leaders take notice. We've already seen this recently when President Trump raised the issue directly with the Nigerian president and asked him point blank about killings of Christians in his country. Shortly after that, there were security forces deployed to those areas because the Nigerian president realized, oh, no, President Trump's focused on this issue. I better pay attention. This is a positive religious freedom.
And we know that not just from press reports, but we know that from talking to Nigerian pastors who said that's what happened within a matter of hours of the president calling out the Nigerian president.
Exactly. And this type of information from folks on the ground who are in these countries most directly impacted by it is often the most valuable information because it's from their experience. They're the ones who can speak to the issue. Very valuable to have President Trump pointing this issue out in discussions across the board on foreign policy issues, which we're and other religious freedom advocates are really trying to call to attention foreign policy establishment's attention. You need to raise religious freedom because it affects all these issues. It's not a side issue.
And I want you to unpack that a little bit. We've talked about it many times, but I think it bears repeating. And that's why the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, has focused on this as he has taken over as Secretary of State. In fact, next month in July, he'll be holding his own kind of summit on this religious freedom issue. It's really hard if you really want to get to the issue of the danger that a regime like North Korea poses to the rest of the world, their nuclear proliferation or whatever it might be. It's hard to really solve that problem without having a discussion of religious freedom and recognizing the human rights that should be extended to all people.
Yes, it is. And we only help the cause of security worldwide and make better appeals and better arguments to world leaders when we incorporate religious freedom from the perspective of religious freedom is a stabilizing force, an economically beneficial force, and a pro-security force. When you really get down to supporting and developing religious freedom, not just to say you're doing it, but when you really do it. And this is why longtime religious freedom advocates are proceeding along these lines of discussion, these lines of persuasion, pointing this out to people who still don't do it, who still look at religious freedom as just a side issue. We really need to disrupt this type of thinking. For folks who want to know more about this, they can go to our website, frc.org/national security. There they'll find an overview of the link between religious freedom and national security. The argument being, to foreign leaders who may not have some personal interest, not be totally persuaded of the standpoint that we're coming from, but rather persuade them using the lines of argument of, if you care about your own security, if you care about your own economic growth, you should care about religious freedom. Now, we're approaching it from a principal position, too. As Christians, we need to support the dignity of every human being to be able to make the choice about how they're going to worship God and live out that faith. But we need to promote – it's a good thing to promote religious freedom. However, we can get the job done, and there are serious arguments to link national security and economic growth to religious freedom. So for all these reasons, we should promote it and make sure our government raises this. And I think we have. Ambassador Brownback's making these arguments. Other members of the Trump administration are making these arguments to link them in our foreign affairs and foreign relations across the board.
Well, we talk about North Korea. I mean, they've been at the top of the list for a number of years running in terms of abusers of human rights, in particular on the issue of religious freedom. I mean, placing Christians in prison camps, where reports say that the lifespan of those prisoners is about 3 years because it's so difficult. What are some of the other countries that are up there at the top that also are persecuting their own people on religious grounds in particular?
Yeah. So there's a number of countries around the world that are very serious violators, according to a number of lists and indexes of religious freedom violations across the Middle East. If you look at a lot of countries adhering to either a governmental or cultural sort of adherence to violent Islamist beliefs, whether Saudi Arabia, Yemen, a lot of the social adherence to these beliefs in Egypt, other parts of North Africa, the Middle East. I mean, you've got a bad situation, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Iraq, a really bad situation when it comes to people living out their faith in a vibrant way, and especially those trying to convert away from Islam. Just really bad persecution. I mean, it does vary. You know, few countries are as secretive and repressive as North Korea, but the repression often approaches those levels for certain individuals in certain circumstances. Iran, people we know are being put in prison for their religious activities and religious faith. Really bad stuff. And this is, of course, aside from the repressive authoritarian regimes, actions taken by China, parts of Russia are starting to become worse across Central Asia. So you've really got a host of countries up there and who are pretty bad on a number of levels.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along. The website, TonyPerkins.com, to find out more about today's topics, in particular focusing in on this historic meeting between President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and the implications that, you know, a positive path forward. Now, I don't think we should be overly confident that this is going to lead to some kind of immediate and great result. I mean, it takes a while to change people's behaviors. But the fact that this historic meeting, first time a U.S. president has spoken to a North Korean leader, dictator, president, whatever you want to call him, this shows that the conversations are beginning. The sanctions, as we talked about yesterday with Ted Poe, a congressman of Texas, are working, bringing them to the table because they're in bad shape. And if we can bring them along and influence them just to, you know, one of the things that I think the president was pushing for on the human rights front is to do away with these gulags. This, I can just tell you, speaks volumes to other world leaders that we put a priority on this in our foreign policy. And we're talking about this with Travis Weber. He's the director of our Center for Religious Liberty. I've experienced this myself, Travis, in my meetings with international leaders, that they're taking note of the priority that this administration is putting on religious freedom and human rights. And for the president to sit down, have these discussions, lay out these priorities. You talked about the president of Nigeria when he did this last month. look, people, some of these leaders, I mean, they may not be moving in the same direction we wanted to see them go. But look, these guys understand when America sets a priority, if they want to have any type of meaningful relationship, i.e. foreign aid from the United States, they need to get in line.
Exactly. And, you know, we can think back to President Reagan raising the issue with the Soviet Union, ultimately resulting in the freedom of those who were in prison for their political and religious views. The point is that foreign leaders need to know and understand very clearly that President Trump and the United States and this administration care about this issue. That's the signal they have to receive. When they receive that, we'll have results. We'll have more results than we've had, right? We can say that. It is difficult and tricky depending on the situation. Of course, the world is a complex place and the situations vary, but they need to understand that we care about the issue. In Pakistan, you've got a culture incredibly hostile to religious freedom. Just now, I was reading about situation of a family from Pakistan trying to get asylum in Britain. It looks like their asylum may be rejected. We've seen this type of situation before too, where bureaucrats do not understand the dynamics of religious persecution, so they wrongly reject right. the family under persecution. So they're going back to Pakistan possibly facing possible death at the hands of Islamists who don't like their faith. The laws are better than the cultural situation in Pakistan, but we need to bring along both in a situation like that, culture and laws, and work with the government to make religious freedom a priority in there and other places.
So, Travis, for the average listener out there on their way home listening to this, you know, they think, well, yeah, well, that's a world away. What can I do about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think as we've been talking about here, you look at something like North Korea. I mean, all many of us can do, most of us can just pray. We need to pray as Christians for peace and for religious freedom to flourish and protection of religious freedom. I think the other issue is as Christians, as the American church, as Americans, we need to understand that we can do something about this issue. We're called to do something about this issue specifically as believers and really own it in the sense of God created us in his image. People have dignity in that, and God does not force us, and he wants us to choose to follow him, but we have the freedom to do that. Own the issue in a way, and when we own the issue, we can become more informed, follow our resources, those of other organizations, and become more educated and pray more specifically and weigh in at times with members of Congress and the administration and be praying more specifically. So a lot of ways, but really owning the issue and becoming more informed.
Well, and I think, as you and I have talked about so many times, how we address this issue internationally is directly related to how we deal with it domestically. Our freedoms are linked with our brothers and sisters abroad. Travis, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, folks, obviously we're going to be dealing with this a lot because it's so important. But we're out of time for today. So until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.